Hello, hello. Whoa, that's loud. Okay, we're going to get the open mic portion of the evening started. So settle in. Hope you got another beer or a glass of wine or something, and you've had a good night. Thanks for sticking around. We have a few readers tonight. It's a bit expanded from where it usually is, so excited about hearing some of this. Our first reader tonight is Michelle Marr. Come on down, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks so much. First, thank you to everybody at Hop Farm Brewing for hosting us. And thank you to Joan and Chris for running this series. And the poems were so brave tonight, and the poets were so brave. I found their work really, really inspiring. This first poem is entitled Mary Ellen. It's about an experience I had in my last year of teaching. And sometimes we're in the same room at the same place, but we experience things quite differently. And this was a moment where something unexpected happened to me. Mary Ellen. Through the double doors and down the hall, resigned to being back at school on a Friday night, I look up and I'm shoved partway aside, my cheeks pulled back against bone, my coat flapping open. I grab for my purse that's being swept away, a tunnel of icy wind, gusts blue and white, wavering at the edges, like I'm in the middle of a strong current. I see you, standing at the head of the stairs, waiting, holding office papers in hands held loosely at your waist. White shirt, maroon sweater, navy pants. You're smiling, like in the photo, in 50s bridal white, that stood by your casket years ago when your daughter told me it was so beautiful that the photographer had it enlarged, framed it, and put it in his shop window, where it held pride of place for years. I crouch, hands on knees, breathe. Two security guards at the desk, at the switchboard talking, see nothing. I stand, straighten my coat, and keep walking. This month, as we all know, is Pride Month. And I remember well when our youngest daughter came out to us, and she was very young. And I've thought so often about that moment, how it changed not only her life, but our life as a family, and how I could never have imagined talking with my mother and father about my sexuality, about my identity. I could no more have done that than fly around the room. And so there's great freedom in that, but there's also a price to pay. There's also real vulnerability, and it takes real courage. This poem is called Asteroid. When our daughter E told us she was gay, she was a freshman in high school. She stood at the bottom of the stairs by the front door. Her middle sister stood by her. E was wearing a plaid shirt, t-shirt, and jeans. When she told us, her face disappeared. In its place was a black asteroid that had been moving slowly towards us all year. Out from its edges pulsed volcanic fires of red, orange, and yellow. It was massive, blotting out everything else. Then E rolled up the sleeves of her shirt, and there were brown and black rubber bracelets up to her elbows. She took them off, and they fell to the floor. Her arms were covered in scars. I stepped forward, put my face against her neck. Her shoulders and back, covered in flannel, were warm against my palms. We breathed in and out. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Next up, we have Ah, Byron Hoot. Come on, Byron.
Just a couple poems tonight. Appreciate the opportunity to read. Great reading tonight. I love hearing poetry read instead of me reading it out loud. First one is The Sermon of the Trees. Sometimes I hear the trees talking about that first tree of knowledge, the natural fruit it bore. That it's not their fault the world is how it is, that the human mind, necessary as it is, doesn't always seem natural. That instead of fitting things together, it tears them apart and doesn't know how to heal. Thank God for the heart, they whisper, leaf by leaf, tree by tree, root by root. They sigh and dance with the wind. Look at me to make sure I've heard the sermon of the trees today. I bow slightly, my eyes squinting in the sun, almost understand what the crows are saying. Second one is called Coachman. I don't know if you are familiar with that brand or not. It's an RV company out of Middlebury, Indiana. I worked there with my father the summer before I went to college. It was 1970. My father and I had been hired by Coachman in Indiana to be handymen. My cousin, Chuck, got us the job. College for me was in the fall. We needed money, and Dad, an evangelist, knew saving souls in the summertime paid nothing. A vice president had bought a farm. That was our assignment. To clean it up, the barn, the chicken coop, burn the brush and rotten timber, build fences. We stayed with Now Then, his sister in Goshen, 30 minutes away. They say men learn about each other when they work together. I saw a side to Dad no pulpit could reveal. I learned something about the rhythm of physical labor, the thinking it involved, plans becoming reality, improvisation as important as any detail, sweat and sore muscles, the sacraments of work, the blessing given by looking at the clock, Dad saying, let's call it a day. The recessional of putting the tractor and tools away, a quick survey of what we'd done, driving down the driveway, thinking of tomorrow. Thank you.
So when the pandemic hit and we had to leave Hemingway's in Oakland and shut down for a year, then we came back thanks to White Whale, and we were there for a few years. Part of being there, unfortunately, was we had to lose this segment of the events, and it always, I think losing this left a hole in what we were doing. Both Joan and I felt it, that it was Hemingway's, but it wasn't quite Hemingway's. We're so happy to be able to restore this to the series, and I just want to thank all of you for sticking around, and everyone who is reading tonight. It's such an important part of what this series means. It's such an important part of what Jimmy created. It was always meant to be a series that brought communities together. And one of those communities is sort of the poets who might not be in a community. So it allows you to have that voice and to be a part of this and to be on the same stage as these other poets and to be just as important as they are to the event and to the evening and just the poetry itself. So as Joan mentioned, to our featured readers, they honor poetry. That's how Jimmy would end every night. You do as well. You do such an important part to honor everything that we do here. So hats off to you guys. Next up, Coalesce. Come on down.
Thanks for that, Ma. Hi, y'all. So I used to write poetry more regularly, and it has been several years since I did. But I've found myself at multiple poetry readings within the last couple of months that have very much made me want to pick up where I left off. So this first one, I will apologize. It is dark. I won't apologize. I will not apologize, actually. thank you, Sheila, for what you read, because it made me want to read this. It's called Moments. There's a moment like that moment when you're looking out a car window. The sky is starting to bleed. The sun is sinking below the horizon. It feels amazing. You're caught up in how wonderful it feels. You can't describe it. A breath that's caught in your chest because you know you rarely get to see beautiful things anymore. There's too much noise, too much rush. Everyone seems to be fighting constantly. It's hard to get a break from those moments you're caught up in the bad. It seems like that's all there's ever going to be. A shot from a gun sends screaming through the air, brings everyone to their knees. An image sears into your mind as pictures flash across the news screen about another crime. Someone in your neighborhood. Someone who sat next to you in class. There's another protest about a kid whose life was stolen because someone in blue, someone with lighter skin than mine, pulled a trigger that released lead, death, into the flesh of another. I'm sitting at my desk, laughing at my computer screen, watching videos of things that are supposed to be happier, because if I don't, I'll end up falling into the trap that is my mind. A well of pain so sharp, so crushing, if I don't drag myself away, I will suffocate in it. Despite the laughter, there's a weight on my chest that's making it cave in. My ribs are stabbing my sides, cutting gashes in my lungs. I struggle to breathe. The room is blurry. I can't see straight, but the droplets streaming down my face aren't because I'm laughing. I wish I could breathe. Wish I could say I was strong enough to bear this, to face it, to keep my eyes on the carnage long enough to do something about it. I wish I could speak to my loved ones about how it all makes me feel, how sometimes I'm scared to walk around a badge that's meant to protect, how I'm worried I'll be next, how I'm afraid to walk out the front door. You haven't done anything illegal, have you? Is the patronizing smile they cast in my direction before they shake their heads. Doesn't matter that I haven't. Wouldn't matter if I had, because in a dismissive roll of the eyes, the discussion is all of a sudden closed. Another ridiculous remark out of my mouth. Your fears are ungrounded. Nothing is going to happen. While I am hoping, wishing that that's true, all I see is another face with my skin tone on the news, dead. All I hear are the cries and protests of strangers on the streets with posters, a fist in the air, grieving over another of my people who were taken, nothing being done about it. My fears are ungrounded. I'm being ridiculous. My fears are all I have. They're grounded in the hate in the air, making its way from the bullets that go flying, not just to the people with the posters, but to the person with the gun. The kind of hate that leaves a scar, the kind of hate that leaves lives broken. Hate doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care about the color of your skin. Doesn't care about the good or bad things you've done, whether you're rich or poor, black or white, straight or not, cis or not. It just leaves a festering wound. Just infects anything, everything it can touch. Spreads like a virus, parasitic in that it feeds off the anger we give it, leaving a boiling, pus-seeping shell that goes off to infect more. Have you ever felt the actions of hatred? Do you know firsthand what it can do? When hatred became an assassin with a target on my melanin, it did what it does best. Left a wound, left anger, left my pain, left my fear. All I want is to be held and told I'll be kept safe. Thank you. Thank you. I wrote that when I was barely 20 years old, I think. Just starting college. And it hit a point where I couldn't pay attention anymore, where I just stopped taking it in. And there was a long period of time where I just felt numb to a lot of it. And then I met my found family. So this next poem is called Colorblind, and it's about and for them. Sludge. Caking skin, cracking near joints. Wariness settled deep in bones so accustomed to gray and mud it can hardly be felt. I have been thigh deep in the stench, sinking for years and have not deigned to envision the possibility of a world filled with color. Would you realize when the ground had turned to clay, when the mud had turned to gray, when the sky aberrated to darkness during distances and years alone? I do not. The gradual fade from color to ash has no stark contrast to compare it to when I look back in the distance. The fade was a trait of the world. I learned the mountainous roars that echoed across the hills and bubbled up from the ground were meant to instill commands I need follow for fear of something worse. I was told the monochrome I lived was the epitome of prosperity. Why seek for something more? Traits of the world, transitions from color, were not to be questioned. Until you, until I saw the shadows did not reveal dimensions when they fell on your skin, but enveloped it. Swallowed you whole and left you drowning in their dark. Until I squinted through the shroud the sky had cast overhead and yearned for the ability to see a smile in your eyes, to place it there. I may be sunk deep in the sediment of my world, but I will take your hand in mine to pull you from the sediment in yours. I may not know of color more than mud and dust and murk, but the heat that runs through my veins at the pain, at your pain, is stark enough to bypass the fade, so I will paint you roses with it. Too light to sink below the surface. When your lips peel back at the flower living between us, the only color of our world, the glee of your smile beaming across the lands like a beacon, others trudge towards us, arms outstretched, curiosity on their faces, eyes of hazel and blue, green and brown that blanket the earth in dirt and grass, lighten the sky with cyan, mark our world with hope. As our hands clasp, fingers interlocked, as we trudge through the mud of this world, pulling each other from its jaws until we rise above the mud, we deck our spirits in colors until the smiles on our faces are bright. Too bright for the darkness of fade and monochrome to rule us. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's no easy thing to come up here and be honest and vulnerable in front of a room full of strangers or even if loved ones. So thank you. And let's just take a moment and take that in for a moment. Really, again. Next up, Jonathan Solomon. Where you at?
I'm just going to read two rather short, snarky poems. Snarky. I hope you can hear me. The first one is called Andy Warhol at the Marie Selby Botanical Gardens, Sarasota, Florida. Ultraviolet's purple orchid lips pout like Stormy Daniels' quel congé just before imperial penetration. 60 seconds of perfumed, unprotected sex. Oh, shrouded prose of lawyers' prophylactic pose. Oh, adulterous flower of the reptile brain. Lust for 15 minutes fame that poisons earth and spreads contamination. And the next one is also snarly. This is called, this was a walk through Frick Park. Late capitalism. Plastic earbuds overriding real sounds of life. Watching toy cars scooting on the road below. Look, that's me in a blue one. The air close and sauna still, like on the surface of Mars and Ashtabula. Brow sweat staining my Panama. With enterprise, we turn the blue-green red and stink the scent of Elon Musk playing the game. All God's creation, your plaything. Tear it open to find its soul. You can split the atom and shoot the moon, or deliver in fact on the promise of loaves and fishes. You could do worse than traffic in ultra-processed food to expand the harvest feast. Chairman Mao didn't starve his 30 million dead by warmth of global trade. There's no Honeycrisp to tempt in Eden. Perhaps, as Shakespeare says, by our hand and mind, the fruits of profit greed are too an art that nature makes. An entrepreneur and free will are acts of God, the assurance of market salvation, putting the toys together again. I bet John Calvin would say it so. Thank you.
Yeah, no shit. So do you like poetry? Yeah. Do you like lounging? Probably. So there's this place in Millville called the Poetry Lounge. Do a lot of poetry events, lots of readings. Our next reader can often be found there reading or organizing what's happening on the stage, I think. Miss Macross.
Events at poetry are definitely more props to like Lori Beth and Sarah Rose and the folks at the Pittsburgh Poetry Collective. They run one of the coolest open mics in the city. But I have been lucky enough to host some events there as well. This poem was actually written in Millvale after watching a Steelers game at the Double L. The following athletes are redacted from this poem because they deserve so much more. I may champion sadness, but I also park a half mile from work to strengthen the ankle that never healed. The bartender just told the cook, "Do you see that guy over there? I wish I could set him on fire with my mind." I turn to peek at that guy over there, but I only see smoke. We are all here to watch the game. We are all morbid and unhealthy, yet we will live longer than our heroes. Once, under the red lights of the court, I saw the white of Redacted's shin pierce his skin on live TV. I saw Redacted's racing helmet separated from his body, yet still protecting his skull. And I have viewed footage of the 1955 Le Mans disaster. And yes, I can believe that they still finished the race anyway. I will give you some context. The year is 2023, and we are watching the Steelers play the Browns in Pittsburgh. Monday night football beer specials are the best. I may arrive home in tears, but anyways, Redacted, a Browns player, drops to the ground, and as he falls, his leg wobbles like ramen on a fork. We may be Pittsburghers, but no one here is so cruel as to cheer. Most of us drink because of our chronic pain. Dude next to me pulls out his phone and says, "Poor guy, that's a career ender. You want to see the slow-mo replay?" I politely decline. And one more, I am a baby to the Mad Women in the Attic workshops, but I have been very lucky to start being a part of them and have my classmates to thank for helping me work this piece. It's called 1994. Today's lunch is fried macaroni and the price is right. V is mad because I'm sucking on his toy hammer for the iron, but he can't say shit because I'm the oldest sibling and I can do what I want. In his defense, L is actually the oldest, but we won't know about her for the next 2 decades. It's just the two of us here, and sometimes Mom and Dad. And every weekday afternoon, Bob Barker, who tells us to spay and neuter the pets our landlord doesn't allow us to keep. His land kids are animals enough. They'll drop a rock on my head before he flees the state for fraud. R's dad will drown her in their above-ground pool, and Mom will tell me she's not coming over anymore because I didn't wash the dishes. The kitchen's scary. The sink is too tall for me. The kitchen is scary because Mom keeps her Glock in the miscellaneous drawer in the kitchen, but she says that I'm lying, that the gun doesn't exist. But when I'm 33 and cleaning out her house, I'll find it, and I will show it to her, and she'll tell me that she has never seen that gun in her life. What am I trying to suggest? Mom is stressed. Mom is cooking macaroni. It comes to a boil, and then she drains and slams it into the frying pan. I don't understand the concept of money. I just get excited when someone wins on the TV and the music swells and everybody's happy. Everybody here keeps getting robbed. When Mom hears suspicious sounds outside, she lets the macaroni burn. She pulls out her ghost gun, opens the door, and shoots one bullet into the air. The hammer falls out of my mouth, and V snatches it back. The macaroni tasted fine.
Thank you. It's such a Pittsburgh thing that even the poets follow football, I think. Next up, and I might get your last name wrong and I apologize, Eleanor Knorr. Come on down.
Okay. trauma from him.
So I've been writing poetry a very long time, but I don't read it to anybody, ever. I've been writing probably 20 years. I'm only 28. I was forced to write my cousin's eulogy when I was 16, when he died, when we were very young. And it was just one of those, oh, well, you're constantly writing, so your turn, was kind of thrust upon me by my family. So I'm actually going to read you three different poems for three different loves of my life, who I am polyamorous. And these are people who have helped me in different ways. We have the first one, which is dedicated to my first love, who I often refer to as my childhood home, and that is titled When You Fall. They say that when you fall in love, you are happier than you have ever been. They say that when you fall head over heels, there is not a single thing like it. To some degree, they were right. I have fallen head over heels for you, not wanting the time we spend to ever end. Yet when you fall, you can also become weaker than you were before. Or are you stronger? It is hard to determine exactly which of the two you have become, especially when in the moment you have fallen, you are sent away. Sent away by the one person that you truly thought you loved. You think that they will love you eternally, but yet you wonder, will they? You wonder, why? You begin to wonder, what happened? You wonder persistently, what changed? You are unsure now, and so you stay in your hole, where you fell. And then you wonder, will things ever make sense again? And one day, I promise you, life will make sense again. That day is just not today. That was written in 2013, the day before Valentine's Day. So, 11 years ago, and that's the first time it's ever been read out loud. The next one is for the woman that I refer to as my connection to the abyss. I have recently lost her out of my life. There was a lot of misunderstandings that with her health and mine, we just faded out of each other's existence. And this one was read aloud, actually, when she was distant from me for her birthday last year. And this was written on November 13th of 2022, and was actually, it's now used as a psychological tool at my college, at the community college I'm from, because it's based about consummate love. So it's titled, What is Consummate Love? True love comes in many forms, many faces, many spaces, many places. You may find it where you least expect it. They say that passion is sexuality, monogamy, a drive. I refute that statement and make passion my own. They do not see the way that we share our passion. They do not know the depths of how we love. You can find passion in polyamory, in asexuality even. I know we surely have. Passion is diving deeper and deeper into the mind until you cry out for release. You can find passion in the depths of your lover's consciousness, in her soul. They imply that intimacy is built from long-term monogamy. They say that intimacy is meant to be private. I say that they are wrong, for they do not know what we share. Our intimacy is words carried through devices, words shared by crossing the confines of space, some words understood to be private but have no obligation to remain so. Intimacy for us is trust on the soul level and beyond that. At last, they push and insist that commitment is monogamy alone. They are, oh, so very wrong. They have not seen the way that you love me, the way that I love you, the beauty of needs met despite traditional view. Commitment is our choice. Commitment is our freedom. Commitment offers flexibility that without, our love would never flourish as it does. I say screw the traditions of consummate love, screw the values of old, find love where you make it so, just as we have. And the last one here was written 2 years ago now for the man that I am currently distanced from, who I would really like to marry someday, who is Hungarian and kind of a hot mess, but I call him my weaver, because that's what his name means in Hungarian. So it is titled Insecurity and Intensity. One day, all of this will disappear, the insecurity replaced with intensity. One day, all of this will collapse. A better future than the fear that obsesses over. Left with an awareness that the pages will turn. Our book will move forward. Our fate will progress as it must. But yet, I linger here. Lost within insecurities and intensities. Promises that provide peace while whims whisper worries. I never know how much to tell you, how much to show you, how far to allow you to see the depths of who I am. My anxieties become obsessions. These insecurities become aggravations, and the deepest intensities become obstructions to our very selves. I long for the future, all the while too afraid to live in the present properly. So, thank you. What? Yep, I will. Thank you guys so much for having Sherlock and I here. So, yeah. This is Sherlock Bones, my service dog. Sherlock, come say hi. So, thank you. Thank you.
Eleanor and Sherlock, thank you both for coming out tonight. We appreciate it. Thank you. And our last reader tonight is Dan Ames. Yeah, Dan.
Dance with me because I hate dancing. There's people in my life who keep trying to ask me to dance, help me to dance, which, like, thank you, also you. But you clearly hate this too. So, dance with me. Ironically, obviously, not to be whatever or whatever. Like, how do people like all of this wiggling? Why are people like this? I can't understand and it bothers me, so dance with me anthropologically. No, honestly, I want to see what would happen if we ask them with their ass in mid-gyration, hey, bro, why are you wiggling so much? Like, where are you trying to go? Wherever it is, you know there's no meaning there, right? You're trying to move, but the concept of movement through space must assume there's a frame of reference, and to define a spatial frame of reference, you need to start with a point, and life doesn't have one of those, yeah? So, party over. Nice to meet you. Clear the dance floor. Read you Nietzsche. The only problem with proving conclusively that dancing is not and cannot be fun is that there is literally nothing else to do here. So, if you want to dance with me resignedly, I guess that'd be fine with me. It won't be fun. It's just to move. It's just because I've been leaning against this wall so long, my shoulder's gone to sleep. Which is fine. Because people need to sleep sometimes. To hibernate, to hide away, to find a place with a wall to lean against where they can learn to breathe again. In a corner that does not pretend to have a point. Know what I mean? Now, a dance circle has zero corners. Where would I lean? On other people? It sounds unsanitary. Besides which, I have tried in the last year just coming off the wall just a little lately, and it's the dumbest, because it hurts, because the numbness is leaving, and so my shoulder is aching like this question that I cannot remember. So dance with me mnemonically? That's dumb. It's just to see. It's probably not going to be what we want it to be, but if I'm ever going to get out of bed, then I guess that I got to go see, and I don't want to. But I'm kind of trying to find a way to maybe wanna, because once upon a time, I did not hate totally the dancing. Don't worry, I still knew it was stupid. The movement, the music, the everybody doing the human. But back then, the stupid didn't press so hard, and this question that I can't remember, whatever it is, has been pressing so hard into my shoulder like a pinched nerve, like I'm pins and needles on this wall. Cold shoulder voodoo doll. That tingling, it's like an identity crisis, as in like, oh my God, what if I had an identity? Or like, will have one again. a place in this, a relationship or vocation with real expectations for my actions to be weighed against, but it's scary having like real expectations that you might be able to actually live up to if you tried, so dance with me, please. Because I am not brave enough for doing the human by myself. And if we're right, the truth is all just nature red in tooth and claw, then we can do the floss until our gums bleed. Till to belong is to belonging, to be reaching toward a something, and they'll say we want the wrong thing, and we'll say, no, dancing, real dancing, is what caring looks like when you stop caring what it looks like. And if they want to watch and judge us, let them gawk and stammer, stutter. They can moonwalk all they want, but you and me are Saturn strutters. And we will hula hoop these rings around this spinning cloud until it's over. So we're broken. We're still in an intersocial inner solar system so much older than we know. We're bits of dust and blood and love, a life we never asked for. But we're basic, and we're magic, and we're gasping on this dance floor. And can I go back to the dance? To arabesques of space dust burning? That's the question in my shoulder, answering itself by hurting. Because, bro, lonely doesn't hurt like that if to be left alone is all you want. And that right there is the heart of it. The fact that I feel so apart from the dance is what proves that I am still a part of it. Thanks.
Wow. Wow, when we have some people we've actually have never seen here before, and a few of you know that I do a little bit of publicity just every once in a while for poetry events around the city. And if you have an event that you'd like somebody to write about in an email that goes out to about 500 people, you could give me your email. And or if you'd like to be on the list to receive an email about a bunch of crazy things happening around here, you could write your name down here and your email. Thank you, everyone, for a great evening. Thank you so much.